My guest today is author John Kalia. John, thanks for stopping by. I don't know. I'm 24/7 now doing the podcast live stream that people are probably like, what does this guy do for a living? Well, he owns an agency. He has a team. So guess what? He can go and talk to people interesting like you are today, John. Thanks for stopping by.
Well, thanks very much for having me. I'm looking forward to this.
All right. So let's talk about specifically how you started as a writer. Tell us the story.
Okay, sure. I started writing in 2010. It was largely because I'm a big reader, and I have a lot of interest in economics and politics and foreign policy and so on and so forth. And I was sort of whining to a friend over lunch about how I don't really have anybody to talk to about that stuff. So he says to me, well, listen, start writing a blog and then get it out there and you'll find all sorts of people that want to talk about it. And he was right. I started writing in 2010. And by the time I was done, maybe 10 years later, I had about 120,000 followers, which is not bad for somebody who doesn't know anything about SEO.
Yeah.
And someplace along the way, my brother, I had a younger brother who recommended to me, or not recommended, I would say he urged me in the strongest terms to write a book that incorporated a lot of these ideas. And I kind of poo-pooed the idea and I wasn't quite sure which way to go. And he tragically was lost to us. He died in 2014.
Oh, sorry.
Mm-hmm. And almost simultaneously, somebody who had been reading my blogs, who was a development officer for an independent publisher out in San Diego, reached out to me through LinkedIn and said, if you ever decide to make this stuff into a book, we'll publish it. And so I think just because it's the kind of message you get once in a while that you kind of ignore. But I think just because of my brother's death, I said, well, you know what? There's something going on here. I'm going to jump on that. So my first book was called The Reluctant CEO. And the subtitle was Succeeding Without Losing Your Soul.
Okay.
And my purpose was to incorporate a lot of lessons I'd learned about leadership into the pressures of being a CEO in a company and talk about what that struggle is. And I've been the CEO of several companies back in the 90s. All of them were investor-backed and so on. And so I know I'm pretty familiar with the challenges. And what's interesting about the book is that I got great feedback from other CEOs.
Wow.
I had this naive notion that I'm a boomer, right? So I had this naive notion that folks in the millennial generation would just love to read all these lessons and learn from them. But it really turned out that the only people who could appreciate them were other CEOs. So I went from there and said, well, okay, how do I get a broader audience? You know, I've delivered my message about corporate leadership and being a good citizen while you're a corporate leader and while you're a CEO. What's my next message? And I thought to myself, well, this goes back now several years, but I had been reading about AI probably, I guess, for 10 years now, and
Right. Really
had a lot of thoughts about how it might impact our careers and our workplace and so on and so forth before it became this explosion.
Before AI, before now.
Before, yeah. I mean, it's been around for a while, but it was
AI has always been around and just, yeah. You know, editing, I guess, even 15 years ago. Think about it. A Grammarly has been around 15, 17 years. Yep. That was AI in certain aspects, right? Am I correct?
Yeah. So, you know, and even if you had one of those programs on your phone that could erase something in the background, that's AI, right? I mean, there's all sorts of stuff out there that's AI, right? And there's sensors in airplanes, for example, that collect data and feed information into computers so that people know when something's going to break before it does and so on. So that stuff's been around for a long time. But one of the books that I read when I was a kid that really impressed me was 1984 by George Orwell.
Yes.
And what I observed is that unlike Orwell's prediction, which was that power would be centralized and this dictatorship would be imposed on the people, technology enabled power to be decentralized, but people were signing up for the same kind of groupthink, to use an Orwell word, and social media became the thought police, to use another term from the book, and that we were just signing up for willfully. So my view of what I wanted to write about was to say, all right, well, this would be classified as science fiction, but unlike this sort of fantasy stuff from the 25th century that you read a lot about, I wanted to write a science fiction that projected maybe 30 years into the future. And the inspiration for it was the birth of my granddaughter. And the reason I say that is because my granddaughter, when she was born, was the first female in my bloodline in 90 years. Wow. So I said, well, what's the world going to look like when she's 30 years old? Right. And so I just sort of imagined a character for her. And that gave rise to my first novel, which was called The Awakening of Artemis. So from there, it's just been this great journey. I really found that I enjoyed writing. I wish I had discovered it earlier in my life, but I'm enjoying doing it now, and I'll continue to do it until I can't do it anymore.
Have you written what other books have you written after that one?
Well, the sequel to The Awakening of Artemis is Parallel Lies, and that was released in November of last year. Okay. And it is already outsold, the first book, interestingly enough.
Well, you figured it out, right? Yeah, that's why people need to write more than one book. Because when you market the first book or you market the second book, you say, you learn from your mistakes. You learn from what happens. You learn. Exactly. You build a audience of people who enjoy your writing. Yes. It's just like social media. People aren't going to follow you unless they're interested in you. Right. People aren't going to listen to you. So once you build that audience, you build your audience each book you've written.
Yeah. And I'd have to say that when I published the first book, and I reached out to people about marketing, one of them said to me, well, you know, what's the status of your platform? What's your platform look like? And I said, what's a platform? So I didn't have a website. I didn't have a social media presence. I didn't have anything. And so I've had to build all that. So I think a lot of that diligent effort on the marketing side is what enabled me to sell. I sold more of the second book between its publication, November 7th, between November 7th and the end of 2023, I sold more of that book than I have to date of the first one. So interesting.
And I bet you still you get a couple of your first books sold still all the time. So it's not like.
Yeah. And actually I've taken the first book and decided I'm going to promote book one pretty heavily this year. And the reason is that some of the people who reviewed it, I wrote book two thinking it was a standalone. It could be a standalone or it could be something that people would enjoy because they read the first book. But a lot of the reviewers said, you know, it'd be better if you'd read the first book. So I'm starting to promote the first book again, because I think if people are captured by the worldview, the world building in the book, by the characters in the book, that they'll want to read Parallel Lives book two.
So there's definite AI predictions in the first book then.
Yeah. In fact, it's kind of a dystopian view. I remember reading an economic report some years ago that 50% of the national GDP was produced in 15 metro centers. So I envisioned a world in which that 50% became 90% and those 15 centers became pods where 90% of the population lived. Oh. So everything outside of that was kind of dystopian. But everything inside of it was very, very controlled, a la the thought police, right? I envisioned this as something that people signed up for and sort of built this world around the idea that, you know, every time you like something, there's a little shot of cortisol that comes through your system and you sign up for things before you realize what the impact is going to be.
But then that's not, people aren't signing up for this. So that's a little bit of a.
Well, yeah, but yeah. So here, well, I'll tell you how I envisioned it. It's kind of a funny story. We're out to dinner with friends and we split the bill. And once the receipt was on the table, my friend's wife said, "Hey, can I scan your receipt?" I said, "Sure." And she scanned it and into some app on her phone. And apparently every time you buy something, you get points. And this is worth maybe $1 or $1.50 a month to her. So it's not a life-changing amount of money. It's right. just that it's just one of those things. You get this little jolt of cortisol in your system and you're sort of like, or, you know, hyped up about it. Right. And then a few days later, we were at a different gathering, and this was at the time where the Apple Watch first became independent of your phone, right? When they first came out, it was an extension of your phone. Then all of a sudden, you could walk around with the watch and not even have your phone, right? And so she was showing this off, and I said to myself, you know, what if you combined the two and made it and made the phone, instead of a phone strapped to your wrist, maybe it's a chip underneath your skin that has sensors that read your endocrine system, right? Now what you've got is a database of things that everybody likes, which is kind of what Facebook does and X or Twitter. And you've got people sort of signing up for this thing and not realizing how much their life is really being controlled rather than themselves being in control. And that was kind of this world inside the pods that I envisioned. And so the story is basically an escape from all of that.
That could happen at one point in time. People could get so fed up and decide, you know, give you an example of this, how we're so split politically. Some people want to have freedom while other people rather have what we have today. Right. And then even worse, not better, where they're given a certain amount of money. They can enjoy their life. Mm-hmm. They can be controlled. There's no crime. There's no opportunity for advancement, and people will be happy with it.
Yeah.
And that's where a lot of our young people today. They would be fine with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure it's just young people. I mean, I think it's everybody. I mean, I think we're all, you know, we're all sort of tied to our phones. You know,
but meaning like just where there's no real change. It's a communism of you know, another one of Orwell's books, right? And just basically, hey, we're being controlled. We don't have to worry about things. We're entertained. And there's really no change in our life any day. How many people do you think would sign up for that?
I think we are all signed up already and we don't even know it.
Okay.
I think every time you log into Facebook and click like, every time you go on X or Instagram or TikTok, you're there because you're essentially being fed what you've indicated you liked. Some algorithm has said, oh, you like this? I'll give you more.
All right. Best place people can connect with you and find more information. Where can they go?
My website is my name, John, J-O-H-N, Kalia, C-A-L-I-A.com. Or you can go to Amazon, look me up by name, John Kalia, or the titles of my book, The Awakening of Artemis or Parallel Lies.
All right. Thanks, sir. I love the conversation. I could have another one with you on that for sure. I'm intrigued by that whole thing because you're kind of creating a universe that could happen. You think that we're already there. We'll find
out. I do. I mean, I think certainly you could say that every trend has a counter trend, and that everything you see as a trend now is going to hit a wall at some point, right? And there's already signs that you know, Gen Z, for example, is resistant to social media.
Oh my goodness.
I've read reports on that. Why? Because, you know, teen suicide and gun violence and all the things that are affecting their young lives, and that those of us who are older and don't have kids at home anymore, you know, we shake our heads at it, but we're not as affected as the people as these young teenagers and 20-somethings right now who are living it. And so, you know, I'd love to see that happen in a way, or I'd love to see the social media companies figure out how to protect us from them. You know, I mean, I enjoy seeing pictures of my friends when they're on vacation, but I don't enjoy being manipulated by information or misinformation or disinformation on the internet.
Absolutely, John. Appreciate it, sir. You're listening and watching The Neil Haley Show, and we'll be back in just a moment.